is an order of the City of Crawfordsville Board of Public Works and Safety has condemned the Crawford Hotel. The date of this interview is October 24, 1974. The Crawford Hotel stands at the northeast corner of Main and Green Street in Crawfordsville. Now, the people we're going to be interviewing are Frieda Jones. She is Mrs. Marsh H. Jones, and her husband operated the Crawford Hotel, and she worked with him in operating the hotel for a number of years. The other interviewee is Marsh H. Jones, Jr. That's Bud Jones. And he spent some of his younger days here in the Crawford Hotel when the family more or less lived at the hotel. This interview is being conducted by Bob Wernley and Bob Harvey of the Montgomery County Historical Society. Now, why don't we begin by having Frieda, would you come over here and just...
Bob, let's talk for a minute.
All right. Now, Frieda, would you tell us, when was the Crawford Hotel built?
The Crawford Hotel was built in the year 1899.
And when did it open its doors?
It served its first breakfast on New Year's Day, 1900.
Do you know what had been on this corner before the hotel was here?
No, I don't. The only thing that I know was that they were cows kept in a pasture that was back of the hotel someplace.
Was there a building here?
I don't know whether there was or not.
Now, do you know who built the hotel?
Yes, Mr. Crawford.
Now, which Crawford was that?
Well, that would be Lydia and Lydia Crawford's dad, where the Dollar Tall house stands. That they lived there in that house.
And that old, they lived in that old brick house.
They had the big old brick, and they built the Crawford Hotel with the understanding that Mr. A.B. Jones would take over the day it was built, which he did.
Now, who was Mr. A.B. Jones?
He was father of my husband, Marsh H.
And had where had A.B. Jones come from?
They came from Logansport. They had the Avalon Hotel in Logansport, and they stayed there until the Avalon Hotel burned.
And then when they came here to Crawfordsville, the Crawford Hotel had already been built?
No, it. They had promised if Mr. Crawford built a new, very modern hotel, that they would come and take it over. Now, they lived at the Robbins House.
And where was the Robbins?
What's that? Well, it's next to the Ben Hur, where the Ben Hur building now stands.
Was that a hotel, too?
That was a boarding house-type hotel.
Now, when the Crawford Hotel was built, was it all built at once, or were there additions?
No, it was all built at once. But even this lobby where we are now standing has had many modifications.
And who then operated the hotel from then on? Can you give us a succession of operators?
Jones family operated the hotel until my husband and I sold it in 1948. Now, that's the business, not the building. We never owned the building.
Now, did the Crawford family own it all that time, or the Crawford...
No, they owned the hotel through previous to 48. Then Mr. Flieder from Detroit, F-L-I-E-D-E-R-I-E-R, from Detroit, Michigan, came down, and they didn't know what they were going to do with the Crawford Hotel, but we had it up for sale, the business up for sale. So Mr. Flieder made an arrangement with the living heirs of the Crawford estate, which was the hotel, to give them a nice deal monetarily. So he took over the rent, and we sold the equipment, goodwill, and so forth to Mr. William E. Killian.
And then from who operated after that?
Well, Mr. Killian then stayed here until his death. And then I don't know who really... What?
Marshall Fuller operated the hotel.
Yes, Marshall Fuller then is here.
Yes, that Bud Jones is chiming in there. I hope you will break in from time to time, Bud, and If you want to make any comments on it.
Our corrections, Bob. Your mother will allow it without slapping you down.
Now, you say then that the hotel isn't substantially the same as it was when it was first built. Well, I mean the outside.
Oh, yes, the outside is.
All right, while we're at it, why don't you tell us about some of the stores that are around the first floor of the hotel here. Are they pretty much the same as they always were?
I don't know what they are now, but I can tell you they're about the same as the big city ones. I know there's some good stories.
All right. What stores were there around
here? Well, I think one of the most interesting things probably is that old tale that if
no,
the...
Stores. Rooms here on the periphery of the building.
Well, when I first came here, Harvey Sharp had an ice cream parlor and...
Where was that?
A drugstore here on the northwest corner.
All right.
And then right next to it was an abstract company. Next to it...
No, which way?
I'm going east, Ellen Lane.
Right.
And then came the entrance to the lobby. Then came a barbershop, which Mr. Ray, W-R-A-Y, owned. Then there was a bake shop, and I don't know who had that at that time.
Hmm.
But there was a bake shop, and I guess that about ended on that end.
Was the Crawford Cafe there at that time?
Yes, the Crawford Cafe was there, and at the beginning of it, of course, the Jones family ran a cafe, and then up on the second floor, a large dining room with course meals, even for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to order everything on the menu, you ordered everything on the menu for breakfast for around 35 cents. So that meant everything you wanted to eat as many times as you wanted to eat it. And lunch was about the same price. And dinner in the evening ran around 35 cents. And the only expensive meal was Sunday noon, and that was 45 cents.
Now, who would eat in that room up on the second floor?
Well, that was simply loaded with Crawfordsville people.
It was a private, was it a,
no,
a it public
was,
dining room?
No, it was a public dining room. Oh, yes.
The hotel was American plan.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Room and board.
So that you were...
And then I don't know what year they took away that room and board. Then they did not give board because of trouble they were having. Traveling men were bringing in too many of the people to whom they were trying to sell their goods and calling them family.
Oh, I see. Now, we got away from the stores. Why don't you go the other direction, up Green Street, and tell us about the stores that were there?
Well, let's see. When I first came here, there was a little shop. I forget what was next to the entrance there. No, that was the pool room. There was a large pool room on this floor.
You remember who ran that?
Oh, absolutely, the Jones family.
Oh.
It was very lucrative.
All right. And just a regular pool room?
Yes, a pool room, and much of the disgust of a lot of people in Crawfordsville, they had 5 cent slot machines.
Oh.
And they ran a little dice game there that was just played right on the counter before. Anybody who wanted to see it, it wasn't a nighttime tossing of dice.
Now, how many years ago was this? When would that have been?
Oh, that would have been about 1923.
And you do remember it yourself then?
Oh, yes, I came to live here in 22, Bob.
All right. Now, we're at the pool room. Let's move on north. Can you remember any of the other stores that were down there?
Well, then the pool room, you see, was beyond this. The side entrance here on Green Street, I'm going north, and next to that was a second barbershop. And it wasn't there very long because the owner of the barbershop on Main Street didn't like it, and there was much feuding and fussing and fighting. And then an abstract office went in there, and I don't know who owned that or who ran it.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, there was a I suspect a beauty parlor came in there very soon because they curled hair with curling irons and not setting the hair.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you men would remember that even if I explained it to you. There's a finger set, a hair.
Now, would that have been next to the alley, or the...
Yes, that was there, next to the alley.
Now, does that then cover the stores in the first floor? What about the corner? What about the corner? I don't think we've...
This corner over here?
Yes, the...
Harvey Sharp's.
That was Harvey Sharp.
That was the ice cream shop?
Yes, and drugstore, prescription drugs.
Oh. Now, was there another store beside that, Bud? Maybe you could tell them.
The hotel was originally open, and why we have Federal Street in Crawfordsville, which is nearly an alley. The original entry to the bar was on the alley, and according to Crawfordsville statutes, you can't have the opening of the bar off an alley, so the alley was named Federal Street.
Well, that's very interesting.
And Crawford Bar legal when it was first opened.
Well, that's...
And that's where Federal Street got its name.
Uh-huh. Now, in other words, you're saying that the bar used to be over to the...
Well, the way the building still exists here on the north wall in the alley, there is a large window along that northeast entry, and that was the original entry to the original bar in the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Where would that... what is located there at the present time, if there is anything?
Well, for years was the pool room. Mm-hmm. And there's this little ante room. I think they had a snooker table in there for many, many years. The first snooker table in Crawfordsville was in the Crawford Hotel.
Put that mainly for the college boys.
Oh.
No, for the Stokers. Bill Stoker and his father were avid pool players.
Now, let's come back in here to the lobby of the hotel. And, Freda, when we walked in, you said that... The stairway was different when you first knew the hotel. How was it different?
Well, this room, which is back in here, which has been built, that's a large open stairway, opening this way and opening that way.
I can't see that on this machine, so...
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't manipulate. Well, it was a stairway that went up directly on the north wall. And then the stairway separated at about the height of the shark story. I should say about 14 feet. You can still see just about where that was. And the stairway went to the left. And then you were on a little balcony. And there was always a sitting room kept there. Desks. I had desks up there for writing. And
Now, here on this first floor, where was the desk of the hotel, or where was the registration desk?
Well, the desk at the hotel, when I first came here, was just a single table poked over here at the side of the stairway on the east, toward the east, northeast wall.
There was not a regular registration desk?
They did not have a desk when I first came here. But they had put in then on the west wall, they had put in a cigar stand and a desk for registrations.
Mm-hmm.
Right over there.
Now, I see that this is a tile floor. Is this the floor that was in here when you...
This is the floor. They always call this terrazzo. And it is supposed to be a very fine type of tile. And it is in fairly good shape right now.
Did it cover this whole first floor here?
Mm-hmm.
Now, were these... was the entrance hall here as narrow
just,
as it is?
Just as it is now.
Mm-hmm. And then the lobby was just what we see here, is that right?
Yeah, this, but there was none of this place, none of this built-up counter business. This was just one big open lobby.
Mm-hmm. Now, I see this fireplace over here has got more of a terrazzo. Did they use that fireplace in there?
Oh, yes, we used it.
Uh-huh.
Especially in the wintertime on Thanksgiving and Christmas week.
Uh-huh.
And then if somebody was coming in of some notability that we wanted to look a little bit extra grand, we built a big fire.
Now,
can I add something?
Yes.
During the war, we took a lot of heat because of the floor design here in the floor. And if you look at it, and if it was World War II, what would you think?
That was looked like a swastika to me.
Why all these swastikas? We had a picture of a German flag, and we pointed out that the swastika twisted the other way, and we call these things Indian good luck signs.
Now, did you have, was there a safe in here on the first floor, or what did you do about security for money.
Well, I don't know that it was so well taken care of. The stairway that went up from the lobby up to the so-called sitting room, right, that overlooked the lobby, there was a cubbyhole there,
mm-hmm.
all exposed to anybody who wanted to see that there was a safe there, and it was a big monster safe, one of those big little old-fashioned ones, and that was where all the daily receipts went in, and ladies who wanted to leave their diamond rings, left them in, we put them in a little envelope and dropped them in there, and fortunately we were never held up at one time. We were held up there one time.
Okay, and why don't you tell us about that? That's one of the interesting
Well, Mr. Jake Andrews was working at night, fine gentleman that worked for us many, many years. The telephone rang, and when the telephone rang, I answered it, and he said, "Send Marsh down here immediately. We've been held up." So we got down here, we all came down, and we got down here, and Ben had come in with an accomplice waiting at the front door and had held up the hotel. And all the help in the hotel had always been told, if you're ever held up, but the escort didn't. So they shelled out what was there, and I forget the amount of money and stuff that we didn't want to lose it. And then the Crawford Hotel police all took out, people took out in their own cars, and they pursued the man, and they finally caught him out in their new house.
Oh, well, what year was that, Frieda?
Oh, let's see, where were we living? We were living out in East Bay. That would be some...
It was in the 40s.
In the 40s, yeah.
Do you know whether the man was ever tried and convicted?
That's a lawyer's type question, isn't
it? Well, yeah, that sounds just like an attorney would ask. He was tried and he was convicted, but we had a very kindly judge, and he was a young man, and to stop laughing at what I'm saying or I'll quit. And so he was a very kindly judge, and since this man was so young, I think he was up in his late 20s, they decided not to convict.
Now, another thing out of this lobby, the elevator enclosure was open. And it was open all the way to the fourth floor. It was just grill work around it. And you could see the elevator go up and down the shaft quite handily. But the thing that was a little unique about the elevator, it was a two-story elevator. And the bottom story, which passengers never rode on, was used to handle freight. If you'd get a large shipment that you wanted to take upstairs, why, the operator in the upper half had to have somebody in the lower half to yell at him when to start and stop. And of course, the electrical switchgear on the elevator was the original electrical switchgear that was put in when the building was built, and you can't imagine the involved system of cables and counterbalances that were used to make that cable throw the switch in the basement, and periodically it would fail. So when that happened, there was a safety cable at the top of the shaft and a safety cable at the bottom of the shaft, and when you hit those, they would physically give you a backup to shut it off. I was talking to Ed Forrester just yesterday. He worked at the hotel with me in the early 40s, and he was still talking about the harrowing experience when he started to come down and it wouldn't shut off, and he went clear to the basement. And that was the kind of trip some of the guests used to make. Unfortunately, on the controls, there was no indication of which was up, down, or stop, and you had to learn this technique by experience.
Now, was that elevator in there from the very start of this
house? That was the original elevator, and if you saw the switchgear in the basement, you could believe it.
Well, Frieda, you started to talk, I think, about some of the guests. You mentioned famous people. Were there ever any famous people that stayed at this hotel?
Well, when I remember hotel business, all the very famous people were gobbled up by some of the residents of the town because they wanted to entertain them. And yes, there were some here. There were a lot of circus people came in, and owners of circuses, and then many, many hotel people. And probably the two best known guests that we had, not once but several times, was James Whitcomb Riley and George Ade.
And do you remember them coming?
Oh yes, I remember them.
Uh-huh.
You see, Riley died, when did he die? 17 or something like that. He was here. the first year that I was visiting here in Crawfordsville, the first time Mr. Riley was here, and then George Adel was here a lot of times because he came with Tom Taggart, because they were circus people.
And what was the occasion for Jane Burton Riley's visit to Crawfordsville?
George Ade.
Well, he came.
Oh, they were there.
Did, what about people coming here in connection with a college? Did
they were usually entertained by someone in the college. And there wasn't as much of that coming back and forth, way back, as there is now. But in the 22s, when I was really active in this hotel, most of the college guests were absorbed by the professors, president of the college, and so forth.
Now, that the we're covered a little bit about the famous guests. How about the unusual guests? Have you got some stories to tell us about those?
Now, Bob, are you egging me on?
Yes.
I'm just asking enough to tell you. Shall I go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead. Now,
we'll
ask the radio to censor this, so
well,
if they're catching this, we don't...
I was telling Bob this story this morning. There was a man and a woman came in, checked at the desk, and signed Mr. and Mrs., because that's the only way we took them in, because we didn't want these lawyers, you know, to get their fingers in our hair. So he signed in as Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. So she was sitting back, leaning against one of the big posts that are still in the lobby, and he said, what do you want, dear? Do you want a shower or a tub? And she said, hell, suit yourself, mister.
Now,
of course, another good old hotel story. Several times, and then Bud added something to it. Marsh would come home laughing, and see if you get this one. And he said, well, we had more than 100% occupancy last night.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what it means?
No.
Well, Bud, finish it. The time you and Forrester were sure that you had 100% occupancy.
Oh, I see. Go ahead, Bud. You finish it. Yeah.
Even at 17, 16 years old, it didn't take much experience behind the desk, and you sort of had a feel when a couple would come to the desk if they were really legitimately man and wife. It was amazing. Well, on this one particular evening, this couple came in, and Mr. Forrester and I decided we'd rent them a room, and we placed a wager on how long this room would be occupied. The only thing I remember about the wager is I lost. But at any rate, after they left the premises, we scurried back upstairs and changed the linen and rented the room again. This is not a widely followed procedure, however.
No, we try not to have that, but even the most virtuous people.
When the hotel was built, of course, there were no telephones then. And few baths. Evidently, that was before the age of cleanliness, which we seem to be entering once again. But to get the service from the lobby upstairs, there was a push button on every wall in each room, and if you wanted the bellhop, you pushed your button, and there was an annunciator board down here, and the flag would drop, and you'd know which room upstairs was asking for service, and then the bellhop would go upstairs to see what was required. And I can remember back in the early, late 30s, as a little boy, that annunciator board still hung in the wall back in the office. But that was another era. Certainly the telephones were probably put in here when? In the late 20s or early 30s?
No, it was I'd say about 25.
All right. As long as I can remember, there were always phones.
Between 25 and 30.
Mm-hmm. For years we had an old weighing machine over here by the door into the lobby, or into the cafe, and it sat there for years and years and years, and it became very apparent the college boys would go over and hit it and then pick money up off the floor. And I approached my grandfather once to have a brute force opening of it, and it didn't even work anymore. So we opened up the back of it, and the reason it didn't work anymore, it was jammed full of pennies, because when we got the back off of it, the pennies went all over the floor. And to give you some idea how long it had been since that had been opened, we extracted $20 worth of Indian heads out of it.
I still have some of those albums.
Now, Frieda, Bud has just mentioned baths. First of all, how many rooms were in the hotel? How many sleeping rooms?
Well, I imagine...
we advertised 100, but only actually had 78.
I think that was it, before we made some of them into...
Of course, all my information is late 1930s and early 1940s.
We're going to... All right, let's start this again, Frieda. Now, we were talking about baths. I wanted to find out how many baths in all those rooms.
Oh, well, there weren't many rooms with baths. After I was here in 1922, is when we put in most of the baths. They were so-called public baths. But I don't know that there was any rooms, even in the 20s, before the 20s, that had private baths.
What were the, would there be a bath then on each floor? Is that it?
Well, no, there would be more than that. There would be two baths. There would be one for the VIPs and one for the 75-cent job.
Uh-huh.
Came and spent 75 cents for a room.
All right. Now, you mentioned the 75-cent rooms. What were the rates for this hotel?
Well, when I was, after I came in here, which was in, I think the most expensive room that we had in the hotel then was $1.25 and 2 1/4 double.
And what was the lowest price room?
75 cents.
Mm-hmm. And did that include meals too? Or
did
it was the American plan?
No, that was
prior to World War.
That was after we opened the cafe here. And you see, in 22, the dining room had already been closed upstairs.
So in 1941, the cheapest room in the house was $1.25, and the most expensive room was $4.50.
$4.50 double.
All right.
That was a extra deluxe fragrance.
Yeah. All right, now tell us, you mentioned those meals that you served and how inexpensive they were. What would a typical breakfast consist of?
Well, I wish that I had taken time to get one of the menus. You named the breakfast item and it was almost on the breakfast. They had ham, bacon, eggs, hot cakes, corn pone. And see, Mr. Rummer, a part of this was before the days of Guy cereal. And then they would have grits and oatmeal, cornmeal. That was all cooked stuff.
Where'd they cook it? Where was the kitchen?
The kitchen at that time?
Yes.
The kitchen at that time was down on this second floor in the back end. The original kitchen, this is for the dining room. I'm not talking about the cafe. The cafe, the food for the cafe was cooked on the downstairs kitchen, which is still here. And then the food for the stairs was cooked in an upstairs kitchen on the second floor.
Now let's go to a noon meal. What would be a typical noon meal?
What you would get in the biggest and finest a la carte hotel in the United States today.
And what they serve on the white tablecloths and
white linen tablecloths and white linen napkins. And if somebody brought a bunch of flowers, and the maids were always bringing flowers, they had a lot of flowers on the tables. And the maids were dressed in blue dresses that buttoned down the front, like an old-fashioned mother had. There's some pictures around here of that.
And would people, would downtown businessmen come in here for lunch?
Yes, a businessman came in here, but the big time for everybody in Crawfordsville to come was Sunday noon after church. The dining room then was upstairs of the large dining room, and it was absolutely crowded.
And how many did the dining room seat?
Well, they had enough that they had 8 waitresses and 2 busboys.
And
I imagine a waitress would take 14 people, carry 14 people.
Easy. That must have been a very large.
It's a large one.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Are we going upstairs?
Yes, we'll go upstairs.
Well, you can see how big that dining room is.
And then they'd have served evening meals too, and I suppose.
And that would be the traveling man's special. They would come down here from Lafayette, so I was told at the time we had the big dining room going, and eat a meal. And decide that maybe they just stay all night, so they call up Lafayette hotels and say that Mr. So-and-so will not be in. Will you kind of remove his bag from room so-and-so at the various hotels that were in Lafayette? Then they would stay down here, eat a Crawford Hotel breakfast, and then go to Lafayette. That was bus service of a kind, omnibus, and they had like a recall thing that had seats on both sides. And
you mean bus service from Crawfordville to Lafayette?
Yeah. They had a bus service between, it was Harsdon, Way back there when. Mm-hmm. So you left very early in the morning if you wanted to get to Lafayette to catch a train. I guess Chicago and Indianapolis would be where they'd go.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see, what other points do we want to cover down here? Do you have any more stories about this downstairs area?
One of the interesting things about the mechanics of coming into the hotel, instead of using the individual card that they now use in the Holiday Inns or motels, we had a large register which was an 11 by 14 sheet of paper, and each person would sign one right after the other. And some days, of course, you wouldn't have anybody come in, so you didn't want
fully covered.
I expect them the business all dropped off after the war.
No.
Didn't.
No, we had good business, Bob, because we about worked ourselves to death to have a clean hotel. Most of the hotels after the war were not clean, and they could get no good help.
Now, tell us about your function and what was your job in connection with the hotel?
I did everything, I think, at the hotel except 10 bar.
And did you keep the book?
I helped. Mr. Jones was not very well at that time, and so as he got to the point where he felt less and less able to cope, I had to be more and more less able to cope.
Uh-huh.
About help myself out.
Yeah. Now, did you have any interesting experiences on the, or perhaps Bud did, on nights that he was on the desk here besides those that you already told us?
Well, there's a lot of tales to tell, aren't there, Bud?
Well, it was always interesting to me. We had to fill out a night report, which gave you your day-to-day operating balances and the amount of money generated by each room on a day-to-day basis. But there was one thing you couldn't do. You couldn't start making that report until the last of the trains came in. And, of course, you think today passenger trains and people arriving that way. But, of course, there were trains both way on the Monon. There were trains on the Big Four. And you always wait until about 2:35 in the morning before you could start making out that report, because you would pick up some guests that way. Of course, the trains became less and less a factor in the 40s, and they became subsequently later on. My grandfather always tells a story, this is a slight digression. When they were in the hotel business in Logansport, they had three rail lines, and each rail line ran on its own time in the Logansport. And then on top of that, there was local time. So in the lobby, there were four clocks, which gave the time that each one of the local railroads were running on, plus local time, and all of them had some disagreement of some minutes, and that's why we had the Standard Time Act.
Well, we had three clocks, you know, hanging on that wall.
What was the point of that?
Well, a Chicago, for Chicago train time, east and west, you know.
Yes.
And then we had to have a Crawfordsville clock.
Right.
And a lot of people in those days, when I first came here, ran on so-called sun time. Here in Crawfordsville, everybody, they ran sun time of 20 minutes off, I think, one of the regular standard time.
I don't know. I never heard of that.
There was no standard time. Who could really know?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, there was a so-called sun time.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we now just break it off here and walk on
upstairs? Bob, would you like to have the story of the never throwing away a key?
Yes, right.
They always had a big ceremony when the hotel was opened. And Mr. Talbot, I don't know, what was he, Bud?
Cap Talbot?
Yeah, Cap Talbot, rode his horse when they had the parade, which is the second or third day of January, which is a dirty, muddy day, and he fell off of his horse. The first thing that happened, he was picked up and put back on his horse. Then the keys, as custom demanded, were thrown out into the muddy street. And a colored man who was working here at the hotel went out and got the front door key and the side door key and gave it to Mrs. Rossiter, who was a sister of Mr. A.B. Jones. And she one day said to me, she said, "Yeah, I'm going to give you the keys." She told me the story. She said, "Never let the band folks know that I have had them all these years. And don't you dare give them up." And I still have them. Because they said, if you lock the door of a hotel, it'll be closed forever. With the original keys. Well, I came down here the other day to see if there was a lock. And all these doors had been changed.
They made sure you couldn't lock
them. Yeah. They got it all fixed.
Let's go on upstairs and talk about that. Now, we've just walked up the stairs to the west of the building. and come up here on the second floor.
Now
here we're coming into a room where we see a terrazzo wall of some kind.
This used to be, we put in this. See, that's the old terrazzo floor where the staff is put in.
Let's talk into the machine here, Frieda.
We're
looking out to the north toward the Journal Review building, or northwest.
This was one of the first good rooms that was here. Now, this was here when I came, and there was a fireplace there.
And see, this fireplace was originally part of the big dining room.
That's right.
Can you imagine what the dining room must have been like with all the bay windows on the second floor north of the side street entrance, all being dining room, and the view you had out on the street with a fire in this fireplace?
It's wonderful.
It really would have been something unbelievable.
Now, Bud, why don't you look out this north or west window of the, what was across the street here, directly to the west?
Well, Rory Summer and I, when we would kick up our heels and have a night on the town, well, I suppose when we were 12, 14 years old, a real night on the town was to get out of the house and come down and spend the night at the hotel and go over to the Vanity Theater and see the cowboy movie. Then we'd come back and go down the pool room and get ourselves a Coke and come up to one of the rooms in the back part of the building, 228, 328, and turn off the lights, not waiting for a TV show to start, but a show started nonetheless, because across the street in the present building where the Hoosier Motor Club and Domestic Loan is located was a very large operation called Colonel Longnecker's Big Push Saloon. And the evening festivities would usually start about 10:30, and oh boy, we would be thoroughly entertained watching the fist fights on the street, because there used to be some humdingers. And then, of course, in that era, the fire department was located right next door where the Journal Review now is, and all these programs were a very short duration, sort of like a commercial.
Was the Big Push a restaurant as well as a saloon, or what was it?
Now you're asking me to divulge at 12 or 14 years old what was going on. All I knew is what was generated on the street, but I had a feeling it was probably essentially a saloon.
They had the best hamburger cheese on the I ever ate. It was just a sandwich place.
Uh-huh.
And a cold lunch.
And a saloon.
And a saloon. Mm-hmm. And the this might be interesting, it's off of the Crawford Hotel, but down in this Longnecker's place, I found an old street light. And Mr. the man who was running it at the time, which was then many years ago, asked me what I was looking for, and I said, anything I can find down in your basement. And so he said, there's a street light down, and he said, oh, that's one of those old gas things that they had burning here in Crawfordsville. I said, what are you going to do with them? He said, you what? And I said, well, I'll take the one that's not broken. So I took it, and that one now is hanging out in front of the weather vane. I gave it to Harold Nixon.
Yeah. Is that the one used to be in front of your house?
Yeah. You remember that?
Yes, I remember. All right. I noticed this is a kind of a curvy vestibule here type of room.
This is something to be very elaborate if you had bold windows.
Uh-huh. You want to take a picture of this room?
I shall.
Right. Bob?
Do you want to hang on?
Yeah. I'll turn this off. Why don't you tell us about that little thing you have in your hand? What is it?
Albert Peck of Chicago, who sold hotel linens, and I was just making the remark, who sold them when you bought a Percal double sheets for $95 to $1. He started the thing to have the lights turned down. That's been back many years ago, to conserve. And don't leave a thing in the hotel, because you're a nuisance to us. So they sent out, as an advertisement, stop, have you left anything? Please turn out the lights. And they were put all over the Crawford Hotel.
And you were put those were in many hotels, weren't they?
In the bigger and larger hotels only.
Well, you always had a big lost and found department in a hotel.
Hotel, that would be interesting.
Yeah, it seems that one of the things that men of the 30s, especially the 30s, could never keep track of were their razor straps. You know, the long piece of leather that they could strap a straight edge on. And we had them upstairs that were leather and canvas, And I would imagine hanging in the linen room, there might be 100 of them. And of course, nobody come back for their razor strop, and I don't know why we ever kept them. I remember the time we had somebody here that had a 10-gallon hat, and they left their 10-gallon hat, and I thought, man, a beautiful white felt 10-gallon hat. But that was rather easy to describe, so they called for that, and I didn't get to keep that one. You remember the people we used to have come here who were drug pushers? I mean, we even had a drug problem back in that era.
I forgot about them.
And I checked a fellow in once, and he was in cowboy type attire and a great big metal footlocker, similar to a GI footlocker. And went up the room, I carried this thing up, it was quite heavy. And he said, wait a minute, I'll give you a tip. And he opened it, and here were all these obvious vials and pills, much more, and not as a drug salesman would appear at all. And he peeled out of an unusually large amount of money. But speaking of tips, one time we had a gentleman here, he stayed here for 6 months. And he wanted this and he wanted that, and he never gave a tip. And that was unusual. But you kept giving him service, and he left one day, and he left behind an envelope. And then it was a 6 month service. And that was good tip money in 1941.
Did they expect you to carry the bags up to the room?
Oh, yes, you carried the bag up to the room, and you had a definite routine.
Bud, I think we interrupted you in the middle of a story. Did we?
No, I was talking about the cuspidors down in
the... Oh, yeah, tell about those cuspidors.
And they were beautiful, big, high brass cuspidors, and they were also referred to in the trade as spittoons. But we had a number of gentlemen here in town, J.J. Darter and Harry Duckworth, and Gail McClure, and they would come in and eat in the hotel every day. And J.J. Darter would always come in, eat his lunch, then come out and buy a cigar. And his noontime hobby was seeing if he could smoke that entire cigar down to his fingertips and still keep the ash on. So sometimes his lunch period would end at 11 or 10, 12:40, and sometimes it'd be 10 minutes to 1, because as soon as the ash fell, the rest of the cigar went in the spittoon and out the door. And that's how he told him it was time to leave. But some of the other gentlemen come in, they'd sit down in the chairs and go to sleep, and they had a standing call to be aroused at 1:15, and then they'd go back to work. So they had a period there that they could have a nice sojourn sleep. There were a lot of people coming off the street and go to sleep in the lobby and not bother around the room, too.
Now, Peter, you were telling us about the first time the Crawford was open, when the people slept in one place and then moved over here for breakfast. Go ahead and tell about that.
On the last day of the year, 1899, the evening meal was served over at the old, what was that?
Ramsey Hotel.
The what?
Ramsey.
The Ramsey Hotel.
Is that the nut house of those days?
No, the nut house is up on Main.
Okay.
This is the Ramsey that's down here where the First National, or the Austin Bank has one of those branches down on the corner there.
The Lower Bank.
The Lower Bank. Well, anyway, the all of the help that were in that old Ramsey Hotel got busy after the evening meal on New Year's Eve and carried dishes and what have you to run a dining room up to the new hotel, which was the Crawford Hotel. The guests in the hotel all slept at the old Ramsey Hotel, but came up to the new Crawford Hotel for breakfast on New Year's Day.
That was 1900. What were some of the other hotels in town besides the Crawford?
Well, let's see, the Nut House is still there. And
now, where was the Nut House?
The Nut House was over on Main Street.
Whereabouts on Main?
Well, it was right there. Was it right next to where the Ben-Hur is now? It was right in that block.
All right. And then what other hotel?
I don't know if there were any other.
Well, the Ramsey.
The Ramsey, and then this one.
The Monon wasn't here.
No.
The Monon's newer than this building.
The Ramsey is where the Elston Bank, drive-in bank
yes.
is now?
Yes, that's
all
right.
Well, the community house is a community house, an old hotel. Was the community house here in 1900?
No, that was put here for traveling young women.
Where was that located?
Up on the corner on Main and Water. I think it was right up in there, there's a big old house there.
Is it about where the post office is now?
Yeah, in that vicinity. And so they had a sort of very inexpensive meals there, and then they had a few rooms, and girls used to go up there and stay up there under chaperonage. Always had somebody in there running in who liked to be chaperoned.
Yes. Well, I think we're free to... Frida, when did you say the big dining room was closed? Do you remember, or did you know?
Well, yes, it was closed before. I know this was closed before 20, before 1920.
Frida, we're standing in the dining room that used to be used by the Rotary Club and the Kiwanis Club. This is in the northeast corner of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So this was opened then after the old dining room was closed.
Yes, this was open when the service clubs began eating out.
Yes. Bud, you've just measured off the area where the big old dining room used to be. How big did you find it to be?
Now, the big eating space is approximately 60 by 70.
60 feet by 70 feet.
And
that's what they got.
We're poking around up here on the room off of where the Rotary Club used to meet, and this serving room that used to be used for the Rotary Club dining room, Frida says, was the laundry of the hotel. Why did they have the laundry on the second floor?
Because all the linens are second, third, and fourth floor.
Now, tell us about the linens and towels and so on in the hotel.
Well, when I worked around this hotel, all of the linens were ironed by hand for many years until we put in a big rotary ironer, and we were still doing our own linens in 48, and they were really done beautifully, but then in 48 after we sold out, they discontinued the linen room entirely, the laundry linen room entirely, and set all of their work, I think, for Lafayette.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the heating plan in this hotel? I noticed their radiators, is that steam or hot water?
Well, the heating plan in the hotel, as long as I was acquainted with all of its problems, was a hot water system. The water was heated down the basement with two large boilers, which had historically been coal-fired, and then there was one large induction pipe that took it to the fourth floor, and then it was distributed across the top of the building, slowly filtered back down to the boilers. Consequently, the rooms on the fourth floor were a little warmer than those on the third and on down to the first. But after the war, we were able to get gas, so the building was converted to gas. But I'm sure that back during the days of Central Crawfordsville heat, when it was over here in what we now call the Dawson Building, this building was heated from the central gas steam plant here in Crawfordsville, because I remember down the basement these large lines that came in through the wall and obviously had been cut off, and that's the only thing that could have come out of them was steam heat to heat the building. So in the beginning, it probably had central heat. A lot of the businesses and also homes right around the downtown district were originally heated by the central steam plant in downtown Crawfordsville. Many years, up here in the dining room, the Kiwanis and Rotary Clubs were called to chow by the gonging of this tremendous bell. And if you want to see the bell, I believe it's still out at Camp Rotary in all of its glory. And the story of that bell, after World War I, it was told in the community that if you wrote the Navy Department, they'd supply you with a steward's bell, which is one of those small bells that probably stands 8, 10 inches high, and you hit it with a gavel, and it gives out a nice bong. So they asked the Navy Department for a bell, and the Navy Department very graciously sent one, but when they got it, it's a bell of prodigious proportions. The bell would hang upon the spar of a large naval capital ship in the era of World War I. Well, not wanting to look a free gift horse in the face, of course they accepted it, and it was placed up here on a large wood support. And when they'd ring it, the entire building would shake. I mean, you'd have to have almost a total hearing loss not to have heard it in the basement.
Good. That was after World War
One.
After World War I.
Right, because that bell was here as long as I could remember. Because we had a lot of people that worked here at the hotel and worked here for many, many years. I remember one lady in particular, Maud Coleman.
Oh, no, it's going again.
And take you on. This thing is drugged from room to room, and that's how the housekeeping chores are taken care of here in the building. Now, I think one of the highlights of the hotel, why don't we go up to the north or the southwest corner of the building?
Now, standing in room 208, which is the southwest corner of the hotel, the bedroom on the southwest corner.
Right. Now, most of the rooms in the hotel from the second, third, and fourth floor follow generally the same floor plan. It's amazing, when you've once worked in a hotel, you haven't lost the floor layout or the number of the rooms. I was reminiscing at lunch with my mother the various room numbers, and I seemingly can recall the room numbers better than she. But this room has a large bay window which now faces the Bell Camp building, but unfortunately it also faced the Goodman building in the great fire in Crawfordsville in 1931, right?
That's right.
Is that on the big fire road? And since we're only isolated by the catty-corner distance of Main Street, you can imagine what happened to the windows on this side of the building. They became unbelievably hot. And to keep the building here from catching on fire, and some of these windows did break, we had a gentleman that lived in this room for many years by the name of Harry Hawkins, who was employed by Mid-State Steel and Wire, and he'd been in a large hotel fire. And he made the suggestion that we tack up wet blankets in front of the windows in case the windows broke, we wouldn't get the heat in the house and have an incineration occur over here. So we did that. Now, see, after Harry moved out of this room, didn't the Frank Sparks live in here for a while? That was upstairs. Okay, that was in room 308. But you can imagine what it would cost to replace some of these curved glass windows. You can see the windows in this room have been replaced with storm windows, but they didn't go to the effort to make them round. They hedged on the window dimension and made straight windows in here. But you notice the curved radiator in the window, and you can imagine what it would cost to have a curved radiator made to that particular specification to fit in that radius. And of course, that's one of the original radiators that was put in when the hotel was built.
Yeah. Notice you've got a fireplace in this room.
A lot of these rooms in the corner and in the front half of the building had fireplaces. The 8s, the 6s, the 4s, and the 2s all had fireplaces. And as you went down the building on the north side along Green Street, the 16s had fireplaces. It doesn't appear on any of the second floor rooms, but on the third and fourth floor rooms, above one of the exit windows, that's the one you'd exit from if you had to, there was a large turnbuckle in the masonry above the window. And after the hotel was built, there was a chain hooked to that turnbuckle, and it hung down alongside the window casement. At the bottom of the chain was a bag, and in the bag was enough rope with knots in it to extend from whatever elevation you were on to the street. And they hung there for years and years and years. And I remember in the 40s, we decided we'd look and see what the ropes were like. And we unwrapped one of the bags and gave the rope a yank, and it came apart like a cobweb. So some of the chains were removed, but the rooms that the family lived in, they'd all been exposed to the trauma of a hotel fire. New ropes were installed on those, but what made it a little bit questionable, at the age they were when the new ropes were installed, I don't think they could have made it hand over hand to the street anyway.
Yeah. Were there any other fire escapes besides just these ropes?
Oh yes, there were fire escapes in the public restroom areas on the third and fourth floors. But unfortunately, and it's hard to believe today, there was no information in the halls as to where this exit might be. I mean, you could wander around in a fire looking for an exit. There was one there, but it was up to you to find the thing. Now, today, by fire code, you simply couldn't get by with this, and I see their exit signs here in the hall now, which were obviously installed after we moved out of the hotel. The hotel, of course, was originally wired all tube and spool wiring. As you drill a hole through the joists in the floor, stuck a piece of ceramic in it and stuck an individual wire through it, and this is the way the building was wired. And after the fire in 48, why the fire marshal demanded that there be an upgrading of the wiring. And if you look here in 208, you can see they upgraded the wiring, but it certainly looks like a shade tree mechanic's job of wiring. We've got conduit running around the baseboard, and of course this really made the place look really down in the mouth.
In this room, Bob,
Fisher that Bud was talking about later before. And Bob Millis, Dr. Bob Millis, Robert, who's the father of young Sam, called me and he said, come on down here immediately. I got my hands full. So I came down and went into the room and he said, she's dying. It was a woman lying on the bed here. And she was one of the most affable people sometimes, and sometimes she was very downhearted. But evidently she got over affable and she took them, was taking overdoses of morphine. And so when she died, Bob and I stayed with her until she died. And after she died, he said, so her husband won't know what's gone on here, right under his very nose. Let's look around that room. And after we had thoroughly looked around the room, he said, do you know what we have found here? And I said, no, I was just holding all the little folded up squares of white and purplish paper that he handed me. He said, we've got over $5,000 worth of morphine right here. And I said, now what do we want to do? You take it, you take it. He said, ye gods, I wouldn't dare. He said, they'd never believe me. He said, you just go into the bathroom and flush it all down. No, I did.
Were there any other deaths that you can recall, cases where you'd come into a room and find somebody that died during the night or...
Died or killed themselves, yes. Okay. Was that woman that killed herself in this room? That was up on third.
That was up on third. We had a young lady came to Crawfordsville to see her son graduate from Wabash, and he did not graduate, and this was of such an emotional strain to her that she committed suicide. And then we had a local resident here in the community who had been badly injured in World War I, and this problem had dogged him all his life, and he came to the hotel and did away with himself. I remember Taylor Burdette, who couldn't get in the room. The room was locked. And most of the rooms in the Crawford Hotel have transoms above the doors for ventilation purposes. And he was selected to look over the top of the transom and see what's wrong in there. Well, Taylor fell off the ladder in a complete state of unconsciousness. And we knew when he buckled that there must be something drastically wrong in that room. And it was a death by gunshot.
Well, then the woman, he got into the room, too, where the woman killed herself.
I remember the night.
She hung herself.
The woman called me up to the room to fix her radio. And I knocked on the door, and she said, here, fix this. And here was this lady only partially clad in the remains of a skirt and this long trailing line of yarn off to the corner. And the next morning, we realized this gal had had a little bit too much to drink, so instead of disrobing in the normal fashion, she'd unraveled her knitted suit, and we had a great big pile of yarn the next morning.
Now, let's see, are there any other things we want to cover in this room, Bud?
I think we've about covered the whole hotel.
Unless they wanted to go up and see what's going on up in there, what we call the back alleys where we had all our troubles. And some funny things. You know, the alley, did we ever call it the alley when you were here?
In the back room?
Oh, where that young Mason, you know, committed suicide.
That's what I just told the story about. Yeah.
We didn't. Mm-hmm. They can delete anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Wright.
After the hotel was built, Mr. Crawford took his contractor to court because the building was not built according to specifications. And the floor joists in the floors are not on 16-inch centers, they're on 20 floors. And just if you walk around in any of the rooms, you'll find the floors squeak with you.
They still do.
And he took him to court because the building was not built up to specification. And for this fact, always bedeviled us. We had trouble with the floors, we had trouble with the roof, because there simply wasn't enough support put in the building to handle the loads. And it was very annoying to have somebody step out of the elevator at night and their entire progress down the hall was always preceded by a squeak, 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 squeak to the floor till they got to their room, and that was the end of the squeak.